go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Welcome everyone to this week's episode of Deep Space High, sci-fi TV review podcast, where we break down the latest and maybe not so greatest from today's sci-fi television. I'm one of your hosts, Jedi Master Steve.
And I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
So, Chris, I saw some interesting news today. The Viacom CBS stock has dropped half of its value in the last week.
Good. It sucks. Sorry. I mean, it's being very poorly ran. So I'm not surprised that its stock's tanking. I mean, they're not putting out good content. Their Paramount Plus sucks. I mean, it's literally no different from CBS All Access. That's something we've talked about. So they poured a shit ton of money into this stuff and it's not paying dividends. I can see why its stock's starting to tank.
I don't think that's why it tanked. It was as high as $100. Today it closed below the $50 mark, closer to $45, I think. And
oh, shoot. This was just a one-day drop?
No, this was a one-day. In the one day, it was a 30% drop. Over the last week, it's down 50%.
Damn. Did something like recent happen to...
Yeah, something happened, and it was, I guess... One of their owners has to liquidate due to bankruptcy and other things. So they don't own a majority of it, but there was some interesting stuff going on with it where like this company who's not supposed to hold more than 10% of the company's stocks might've actually did, which is against like regulations or something. So it's an interesting story. I heard about it. I was like, oh, since we're talking about Paramount Plus and CBS All Access, which was its former name in Star Trek, might bring it up as a cold open.
Yeah.
So I didn't see much into it.
Well, I mean, if I owned a company or I owned a, you know, broadcast company or something, I would try and buy the rights to Star Trek from Viacom if they're not doing too well financially. Now, stocks are not an adequate reflection of, you know, a company's, you know, how they're doing, financially speaking. They're just, once it gets to the market, you know, it's just trading within the secondary market. Companies really have nothing to do with it. Now, granted, their shareholders, they want to please their shareholders, and so the value of the stock's important there. But when it comes to the company actually making money, stock prices aren't an adequate reflection.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, looking at it year to date, so this is from March of last year, it started off right below $20, and then it worked its way all the way up to $100 in early March 2021, and then finally plummeted back down. So there was some rise and fall to it. So I was just a curious news line. I didn't realize it had skyrocketed that much over the last...
That is interesting. I mean...
3 quarters of 2021.
It's amazing. So it lost almost everything that it had gained in over a span of a year in less than a week. And most of that was in one day.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
And like I said, it's a complicated situation. I don't know a lot about it, but it looks like that some capital management company had to liquidate, which is why you're seeing a lot of the price drop.
Man,
so that's just interesting news I saw today.
Well,
thought it might be an interesting cold open.
If anybody who out there just so happens to own a TV broadcast company, you know, any of our listeners or something, and they want to buy the rights to Star Trek and are actually a decent Trekkie fan, I say go for it. Do it. Because CBS is not doing a very good job, or Viacom, whatever the hell they're called.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess that's a good segue into this episode.
You can do it! You can do it all night!
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, man, let's do it.
I mean, come on, I just don't see a problem here. Let's just do it.
I'm gonna go do it.
All right, so what do we got in store for this week's episode then, brother?
So in this week's episode of Deep Space High, we'll be talking about Star Trek Discovery Season 3, Episodes 3, called The People of Earth, and Episode 4, Forget Me Not. So I guess we'll start off with Episode 3, People of Earth. Chris, well, I was going to ask how you thought of it, but we usually do that towards the end of the show. So we will put a pin in that question for a little bit. But this is an interesting episode where we kind of see what Brenham's been up to for the last year in the future.
They kind of just quickly rolled through it. But, I mean, I do, even at the beginning of this episode, I already had a gripe with it. I mean, not to say that I had a lot of gripes with it, but hair does not grow that fast. And especially when you put it in a weave, like, that hair's got to be pretty damn long for it to be that long of a weave. So it's like, yeah, that hair doesn't grow that fast in the span of a year.
Yeah, I thought the same thing, but then again, that's probably the least of CBS's worries when it comes to producing some of these shows.
Yeah, that could be true. I mean, I like the hair, like, I'm not going to lie, but it's better than the shortcut.
Yeah.
But, come on, it's more than a year. Or it's clearly a wig.
Maybe they have some sort of accelerator technology where she accelerated the growth of her hair.
Oh my god, that would be great. Do they have the same thing for beards? And if they do, can they have that technology now so I could start working on one?
I don't think it works if you have an inability to grow a beard.
I don't know. I've just been trying to grow a beard I've always wanted to grow a beard, and our family cannot do it, so.
No, we don't have the genes for it.
Yeah, I think that people still have the capability. It's just there are ways, other ways of growing it. It's not just in the genes.
Mostly genes. But that's a story for a different genre. I don't know. It's not for this podcast.
Unless you're into beards. I mean, I guess there is a community specifically for beards.
Yeah, but this is not a beard podcast. This is a science fiction podcast. So we could talk more about the hair.
Facial hair growth.
Accelerator? The hair accelerator?
Yeah, accelerator. I mean, that'd be a booming technology if people could do it today.
Well, like I said, if you have a bald person and if the follicles are unable to grow hair, it probably wouldn't accelerate anything.
Well, I think there's still follicles there in the skin. It's just it does not grow thick and healthy. Like it just doesn't, or it can't break through the skin. So that's why we have like spots.
Well, yeah, that's why I'm saying an accelerator will just grow the hair that can grow faster. But if the follicles are not producing healthy, good hair, it's probably not going to do squat.
I mean, it could just strengthen the. I mean, yeah, you never know. It could just strengthen the follicles, so it just. That would be what it would be, the accelerator. Maybe not an accelerator, but maybe like a strengthener. I don't know. Follicle enhancer.
I don't know. I don't know.
Well, did get into it. But
yeah, let's. Yeah, we're.
That's the nice part about
it.
Science fiction, though. You could still talk about future about anything because it's fiction.
Yeah,
and I guess it's still science, so it counts by association. Anyways, back to the episode.
Yeah, we also find out that Brenham in the year was able to get in touch with Terra Elysium, where her mother was supposed to be. And they've had no contact with her. They had no idea who she even was. So either her mom lied about it and she is not located on Terra Elysium, or...
Well, time changed. Or she, when they changed the events, I guess time changed, given that it's not a wasteless, barren wasteland anymore. So... The question becomes...
Yeah, but if the Red Angel suit that her mom was using was anchoring her back to Terra Elysium, she still would be at Terra Elysium, but instead of a barren planet, it would be a populated planet.
Unless she was thrown back to the time where it was barren, and then because she existed in that time, when they changed time, and because she was already in the future, that event never occurred, so she could be... somewhere else.
Alternate universe or alternate timeline type situation.
Yeah, it could be almost like the Kelvin universe.
Okay, because that makes some sense.
I don't know. I mean, the whole concept of time is a confusing one to begin with, and I think that's why they keep going back to it, as you explained last episode or asked about last episode, was because nobody really understands it, so you can kind of do whatever the fuck you want and not have to worry about breaking rules. And I think that's kind of why they keep going with the time angle.
Yeah, that's probably a really good point.
Yeah, but the problem is the science is catching up. And that's the thing about Star Trek. It's supposed to stay with the science. Or, you know, have actual scientific explanations.
Yeah, I guess. But there's a lot of stuff that happens in this first couple minutes. Saru finally takes the official command of the Discovery. And he becomes the, instead of acting captain, the actual captain based on chain of command.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. It seemed like a touchy-feely scene that didn't have as much... They overdid it to where it really didn't have as much impact as it probably could have had.
Well, it was one of those things, if you remember in the finale or towards the end of season two, Saru wanted to talk with Brenham and kind of determine which of them would be the best suitable and, you know, most suitable candidate for the captaincy. And, you know, we find out when Brenham returns after a year being in the future before the Discovery arrives, she is, you know, she might have wanted it before she went into the future, but now she's like, it's Saru's. He's been the first officer for a while, and he's more deserving, or just as deserving as she is, to be the captain. When he feels the opposite, he feels she is probably the most deserving to have the captain's chair.
Yeah, I mean, and the way that you say it, it just sounds like in practice it should have gone so well, but when they actually did it on screen, it just didn't come out as well, or it didn't have as much of an emotional response to me as
you could have. I would have played it if I was Brenham, and Saru would have been like, well, we got to talk, and I would have been like, no, it's your chair, you're the captain.
Yeah,
well, I would have just made it clear, because it was a little drawn out. I would have just been like, and she said this, she's like, chaining command depicts it, there's no one more worthy, you are the captain.
Yeah, I mean, the actual scene wasn't too bad. It was more of, I guess this is more of the director's problem or the director's fault for the over-dramatic music, the long cut scenes, the constant speeches. Oh, I know, and it's annoying as hell. Like, and then just staring at Brenham, staring at Saru in a weird angle while dramatic music. I'm like, yeah, okay, can we move along? We got other shit to do here.
Yeah, this episode made me miss the Trek episodes of old, when it was just, even though the writing wasn't good in all the old Trek episodes, it was like, it just felt better.
Yeah, well, tell me, which would you rather have? The boring, quiet dialogue where they're talking and a lot, or this over-dramatic sequence where they don't talk, but it's just over-dramatized BS?
I'm not a fan of drama, so I would, you know, at least with the talking and the back and forth of the old series, you were getting information, and here it's like a sci-fi soap opera.
Mm-hmm.
A little less dramatic, but...
Almost. And it's not even a good sci-fi soap opera either. It's kind of a bad one. That's the sad part. But yeah. I mean, this, which is weird, because I mean, this episode wasn't actually that bad of an episode. And it's interesting, if you noticed with this episode, when they go back to Earth, they're actually called the United Earth Alliance. And do you remember me talking about that earlier and a couple episodes ago?
Not off the top of my head.
Well, that's what Gene Roddenberry originally called in the original series. Before the Federation, it was the United Earth Alliance. And if you watch the first season... For the first like 20 episodes, they went by the United Earth Alliance. So I just thought it was interesting that, you know, after the Federation was gone and left Earth, that they just went back to being the United Earth Alliance. Which was, it was actually a nice moment for people who knew what's, you know, a little bit about Star Trek.
Yeah, I didn't know. I thought it was called the United Earth Defense Force or something.
Something like that.
Something like that. It's been a couple days since I've seen the episode. I think I watched it 2 or 3 days ago.
Yeah, well, we had some technical difficulties trying to record this the first time, so this is our like second attempt, our fifth attempt recording
it. It feels like our 10th attempt.
Mm-hmm. But I'm actually rewatching it right now, and I'm a little bit ahead of where we're at, conversationally speaking.
Oh. Well, there's some things about this episode because, you know, when they get to Earth, as you mentioned, they are not receiving a warm welcome from the humans. And you find out they're actually at war, and you find out, not war, but they have squabbles of pirates essentially trying to steal dilithium. And, you know, so Rue's trying to play it off as they're the ancestors of the original crew of the Discovery. And she's like suspicious because she's like, you all stuck to the Starfleet code or whatever.
Yeah. Because, I mean, they're being a generational ship like that, it would be hard to maintain that kind of discipline being a generational ship.
Yeah. And it also reminded me of the episode. I think it was an Enterprise episode for sure, but there's one where they encounter the Enterprise from like 100 years from now, when it's a similar situation where the descendants of the original crew are running it.
Oh yeah, I know which one you're talking about. They were thrown back in time like 100 years, and they had 100 years to prep and prepare in the void, and their descendants met their them just before they went back in time to try and stop it. Yeah, I know which one you're talking
about. Yeah.
Yeah, they also did it in Voyager too.
I never got that far. I never watched Voyager. I still haven't.
Voyager's not bad. Voyager's a little bit more like Next Generation, to where it's new species, going to a new system. Oh, what are we going to explore this week? And where Deep Space Nine was a little bit, it was kind of its own thing. So.
Yeah. Oh, man. Excuse the yawning. I feel like I do that too much in these episodes.
I know, right? Well, it's because we do it at the end of the day, and we're both pretty tired. You know, you got to work. I got school. I spent most of the day school, so. But, I mean,
what did you think about the United Defense Earth Forces beaming onto the ship and kind of seizing it and doing we'll call it a pirate check to make sure that it's not pirates who are taking over this Federation ship and they are who they say they are?
Well, in traditional naval practices, that was standard practice, actually. They would come aboard and do inspections before when dealing with other, naval services. So if you had a U.S. ship going into British waters, post-revolution, they would have inspections to make sure that they weren't pirates.
I meant not for the procedure itself, but more of the scenes that involved the people being there.
Well, I mean, I actually thought it was accurate. I thought they did it pretty well. One of the nice things about Star Trek was the realism, that sticking with accuracies. And then I thought it was interesting the way that they just, the new transporter technology, to where they instantaneously do it. It's not like you see the little beam down with the lights. It's just, boop, we're here, motherfucker. I mean, it's like
surprise, their shields. Surprise, motherfucker.
Yeah, it's like, what's the point of their shields? Because their shields were up, I believe.
I think they were, or they might have gone up right after they beamed aboard, because I knew, I don't remember what the pirates who ended up confronting the Discovery, I don't remember what their race or species or whatever they were calling themselves were.
Well, the technology kind of reminds me of an episode of Next Generation, and I can't remember the name of the planet, but it was one of those... like a technological Edens, almost like the Lost City of Atlantis, but it was like a cloaked planet, and they had like those instant transporting devices where they could just transport through, and they just that's almost what it reminded me of, and it almost seemed like the Federation eventually developed the technology based off of that for themselves.
Probably so. But like I said,
they were supposed to be like centuries more advanced in technology than they were.
I like I said, though, I don't remember if the shields were up and if they're able to still transport through shields, or maybe they're just able to transport through ancient shields, since, you know, that Discovery's technology is 800 or 900 years old.
Yeah. And then when the pirates got there, they were able to, jam their transporters. So,
yeah, well. The one girl did that. The one 16-year-old girl who was a part of the inspection crew. Able to jam. And
she was the one who sabotaged it. And then the pirates just so happened to come.
yeah, it was like a perfect timing situation. That way she can find out more about the Discovery, because she's curious on why this old technology looks so new. And that's because it's like a year old or 2 years old, but
mm-hmm.
you know, well, 900 years old at the same time.
Yep. Very true. But I thought it was funny how, I don't want to say it was funny, but I thought they were lucky that when they took the ship directly into the path of the torpedo, when they were firing on Burnham, when they were doing their own thing, that it just didn't completely destroy Discovery. I mean,
well, they took out Shields in one shot, and if the Discovery was in their own era, it would have taken several torpedoes to get the Shields down to zero.
Mm-hmm. But I figured there'd just be that much advancement of technology, but yeah, I just figured with that much time there would be a more significant gain in advancement of technology, but I guess not, given the
or
fact
maybe
that
it speaks to the strength of their shields.
Could be, but I don't think so, given the fact that they said that they were using quantum torpedoes, and quantum torpedo technology was introduced towards the end of what, well, technically it was introduced in the Star Trek movies with, I think it was First Contact, when they got the Enterprise E, they introduced quantum torpedoes. And then they also introduced it on Deep Space Nine with the Defiant. So
I don't know. I've always known the photon torpedoes.
Yeah, well, they switched, and then they used quantum torpedoes here in Discovery, the pirates did, so it's the same tech. So I figured there'd be more advancement in that time frame.
Oh, well, you know, maybe it was a weak defense system. Maybe it's a strong shield. Who knows? That could be up for debate.
Yeah, could be. Could be.
But I liked how this episode, the pirates that Earth has been dealing with is just a colony on, I think they said Titan, which is a moon of Jupiter or Saturn, one of the two.
I believe it's I don't know. I think it's Jupiter. I think I can't remember off the top of my head.
Tell you in a second. Titan is the largest moon around. I just keep getting largest moon in the solar system, or the second largest moon. Largest moon of Saturn, second largest moon in the solar system.
Oh, got it.
So, yeah. So, Saturn. And, you know, they find out who you think is this alien species that's kind of... You remember the bad guy from Aquaman who was wearing the black suit with the red eyes?
Yeah. Oh,
that's
kind of
who
they
reminded
me
of.
Like him. They
but
did.
With more
now
eyes.
That you bring that up. Mm-hmm.
So...
Yeah, they did. That's
they
funny.
Find out they're just humans wearing some sort of either scary suits or some sort of suits, just trying to get by since their research facility is no longer self-sustainable.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's one of the things that a lot of people don't get about the Star Wars and the Star Trek universe is that they have self-replication and they're able to produce their own resources with energy, but you run out of that stuff, then you're kind of become SOL and lose your self-dependency.
Yeah. I know you can hear my chair, and it's getting so... I can't even move in the damn thing without it.
I know, right? That's one of the things about those booms. They just pick up everything so well.
Yeah. Well, I think any mic would be picking up. It's so freaking loud. But anyways. So, I will say this. There's a lot happening in this episode, and we do find out that the one 16-year-old is carrying a symbiote. And this is important because one of the reasons that the Discovery was brought back to Earth was because they received a message from... Actually, Brenham received a message from an admiral something about 12 years before, you know, 12 years from the day this is taking place.
Yeah, I don't remember what his name was. Is it Saltal or something like that?
Oh, yeah, Saltal or something like that. But you find out that 16-year-old is carrying a symbiote, which is really seems like the first known human symbiote relationship or symbiotic symbiosis. Yeah, that's the word.
Yes. So you okay? you actually find out that the symbiont is actually a Trill, which is related to Deep Space Nine.
Well, yeah.
So if you remember, Chatzia Dax was a symbiont. She had it's the same thing. So she has the Trill symbiont in her belly, essentially. And for a human, that's uber weird.
Yeah, because there was a Next Gen episode where Riker had one in him for a while, but it wasn't going well.
Yeah, so I believe the guy was a diplomat who was boinking Crusher. And then they got into an accident by pirates, and the host body died. So they had to transplant the Trill to somebody so it would survive, because they can't survive without a host. Mm-hmm. Riker did it, and Riker was only able to hold on to the host for less than a day, and he was on painkillers for most of the time, and nearly killed the host.
Killed both of them.
Yeah, because they had to go through and do the negotiations, but that was when they first introduced it. So they were the makeup was different. They tried to make it more alien rather than just the tattoos, because when they got to Deep Space Nine, they didn't want to do that makeup like every episode. So they just did.
The little like orangish dots across the temple and forehead.
Well, yeah, no, that goes all the way down.
Whatever. You know what I meant? That's when they're wearing clothing. That's all you got to worry about.
Yeah. Yes, but there are episodes where they wear less clothing, and you can see that goes all the way down.
Well,
but yeah, so this chick being a human and being able to carry the Trill was super weird. Given that,
so what were you thinking at the end of this episode when they said, "Oh, I guess we should go to Trill"? What was coming up in your mind when you heard that?
Please don't fuck this up. Because they've done this before. They've gone to Trill before in Deep Space Nine, you know, dealing with the Dax symbiote. So, you know, a lot of this stuff was, stuff they have explored before, and it's kind of rehashing. Kind of like when they went to Taurus 4, I think that was what it was called, you know, with going back to the pilot, you know, re-exploring stuff they've already done before. It's kind of that same thing. And I'm like, okay, just don't fuck it up. Don't fuck this up. I'm like, okay, hey, that pool, that was, you know, you might make fun of it from Thor, but that's a real thing. That was in the episode. You know what they're doing? It's, you know, it's accurate. And I'm like, okay, this was a well accurate episode. I'm like, all right, let's go. You're not fucking this shit up. I was really hoping the symbiont was Dax, though. And I was a little disappointed it wasn't, but it's okay.
Well, I mean, you kind of realize when she says, when the girl says that she is the Admiral, and the Admiral was something tall, that you kind of, just knowing how the Trills work, knowing that the last name is kind of the symbiont's name and the first name's the host name.
Yeah, but it seems like they didn't really know much about Trill at the time, which makes sense if Trill was kind of early for them when they were in their original timeline. So that way there wasn't a lot of Trill in Starfleet, because in the 24th century, there was several Trill who were in Starfleet, and several who had the symbiont. Chatzia Dax is one. The Dax symbiont's a common one. They had several hosts who were in Starfleet. So, I don't know. Maybe. I don't know.
Okay.
I kind of lost my train of thought there, so.
Yeah, well, there was a lot to unpack in that episode. You find out that Federation has not been on Earth for over 100 years, especially mm-hmm. after the burn is what they were calling it, and they kind of explained that any ship, I guess, with an active warp drive was.
No, I guess not. I was going to say, if that's the case, then Dax might be dead, or the Dax symbiont's probably dead, died in the burn, but that doesn't mean that they were in Starfleet, so maybe they could have survived.
Maybe. We'll talk about that more in a minute when we talk about episode 4, but you find out the Federation hasn't been on Earth for, you know, almost a century or about a century, and that Earth is no longer a part of the Federation. So the United Defense Earth Corps people have no idea where the Federation relocated. And how much you want to bet, I mean, we don't know because we haven't seen, but how much you want to go to bet it's going to be in a former enemy territory like Kronos or Romulus or somewhere along those lines.
It could be.
Place our wagers now. If you had to pick somewhere for the Federation to be, where would it be?
Well, I would guess it would be on one of the original planets that signed the original Federation charter. So either Vulcan, Andoria, I was going to say Talix, but I don't think Talix signed. You know, one of the core planets. One of the Tellarite home planet. I don't remember what it is. Probably Vulcan, maybe.
No, I think it'll be on a former enemy planet. So we're looking at Romulus, Kronos, or maybe Gorn. Even Deep Space Nine. What's that? Dominion. Whoa, Bajor.
Oh well.
Or Bajor.
You got Bajor.
Cardassia.
Oh, Cardassia.
Them too.
That'd be an interesting way to piss off some Star Trek fans.
We'll see. So I'm going to lock in a guess of Romulus.
Better yet, just make Kai Wynn revival and then make Kai Wynn the new president of the Federation. Oh boy, that would piss off a lot of Star Trek fans.
No idea what probably, you're talking about. So if you had to pick
probably
one...
probably the only person more universally hated in the Star Trek universe than Wesley Crusher.
No. So if you had to pick one planet for the Federation to be on, take your guess, what would it be?
I'm going with Vulcan.
Okay. I feel like Vulcan would be too obvious, though.
So. Yeah, but that's why they would probably do it.
So, we'll see. Hopefully they answer that question here next time we talk about it, because they definitely do not answer that question in episode 4, Forget Me Not, which we will start talking about right meow.
Yeah. Yep.
So this episode entirely... takes place, for the most part, takes place on Trill, which again, the Discovery crew is not coming to the warmest of welcomes.
Well, I mean, they weren't too bad getting down when they thought that the host was a Trill, but yeah, they were pretty shocked when they found out it was a human host as well, because yeah, I mean, it was weird.
That's when shit hit the fan, and half the group was divided, and then you had one guy kind of arguing for, well, you know, there's not many hosts available, so if we could go interspecies or transspecies or whatever to be able to keep some of these symbionts alive, what's the harm when no one else sees it that way?
Yeah, well, I mean, again, there might also stem a little bit of jealousy that a non-human is, you know, hosting a
symbiont.
A symbiont. Yeah, because, I mean, that's considered a special privilege, because according to their law, or what they tell their people, only a small percentage of the inhabitants of Trill can host a symbiont, but that's not true, because they eventually that's one of the things that they uncovered in Deep Space Nine, that most of the population is actually capable of doing it. They just don't do it because there's not enough symbionts to go around. And, you know, there might start be violence going and attacking the symbionts. Apparently that concern was justified, given that the events,
yeah, they wanted
of this episode,
to force it out of her.
Yeah, which probably would have killed both of them. So, I mean, this is a... Damn it, I lost my train of thought. God damn it.
Typical Chris, can't get through a train of thought.
Well, no, it's I keep moving on to the next one. I'm like, okay, and then I got to go to this after this. And then I'm like, oh, wait, no, I lost it. Where was I supposed to say at this point? And, you know, it's I'm moving ahead and I lose where I was at. So then it derails it. Derails the train.
Way to go.
Yeah. So shit happens. It's okay.
But you were saying that the pool scene seemed like it was pretty consistent with what you saw in Deep Space Nine. I haven't gotten that far in Deep Space Nine to get to that Trill Dax episode. I'm only about halfway through it. And like I said, I haven't put it on in almost a year now. It was like summer of 2020 the last time I was watching it. And I think I got into season 4 and stopped.
Oh, yeah. Well, Star Trek's weird. Star Trek doesn't get good until about season 3 in almost every season. Except for maybe the original series.
And probably Discovery at this rate.
I don't know. I think Discovery season 3 has actually been better than the first 2 seasons.
Wow. Well, there's still a lot of episodes left. And like I said, from what I heard about it, it's not really getting better from here. But we will be the judges of that when we actually get to watch it for the first time.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. There's a lot more consistencies that I'm enjoying with season three, where it was lacking in the first two seasons. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. So, pulling away from Trill for a little bit, you get a montage of Doc Colbert doing his analysis of some of the crew, and you kind of realize that, you know, while the crew is physically healthy, they are stressed out the ass, to keep it in layman's terms. So, you know, we saw this in, I can't think of her name. I think it's Kayla something. I can't think of the helmsman's
Carla, last name. Something like that.
Kayla something. But it's the, yeah, it's the pilot, half cybernetic type pilot who has half her head shaved off. You know, she's stressed out the ass, suffering from some major PTSD after crash landing into the future. And Saru, well, I guess technically the sphere data is what Saru thinks it is, came up with the idea of having a movie night and just showing his appreciation for the crew. So what he does is tries to set up a dinner, which starts off decently before they start reading out haikus when Kayla, God, I hope that's her name. Maybe I should look that up real quick.
Yeah, and then I guess I'll kind of pick it up.
Yeah, but when they're giving the haiku, she goes off the rails and
she's obsessed with the, what's his,
Stamets kind of being
blood, pierced. His blood.
Yeah, his blood, and when he suffered his accident.
Yeah, she kept trying to come up with a haiku, but all she kept saying was Stamets blood over and over again. It's like, okay, you're going, it's clear you're kind of going through some shit, and you're kind of just killed the mood, so stop, you know, it's like, hey, come on, just stop, you're killing the mood.
Yeah.
You know, because everybody was having fun until they tried to get her involved, but.
Yeah, such a cock block.
Yeah. But, I mean, she was going through some shit, so. I mean, true. I guess they all kind of were, but interesting how the solution was going back to, you know, Star Trek Enterprise, because that's kind of where they got the movie night thing from, was they used to do that all the time on the NX on the NX-01.
Oh yeah, that was a big thing. It was interesting, the movie they chose, because it was, yeah, Kayla Detmer. Okay, found it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it was a Charlie Chapman film.
Yeah, it was like Charlie Chapman and I think Buster Keaton. I think that was, I don't, one of their movies.
Yeah, well, but Charlie Chapman is the funniest man of all time.
Yeah.
Never actually spoke a word during any of his movies, I think, but
I don't think he did. But yeah, then, you know, Detmer loses her shit. She goes off on Stamets and is like, you know, none of y'all would be here if it wasn't for me landing this SOB. And then Stamets is like, well, if it wasn't for my ability to jump, none of y'all would be here. And, you know, they're having
he's got a bigger dick contest for pilot versus the navigator.
Kind of. It's. I mean, if you see it from her side, it's like, you know, he's getting all the glory, but then again, she did just save the ship's ass when they went through the wormhole, and she doesn't feel like she's getting the proper recognition for it.
Yeah, which is actually good. I'm kind of glad that that Discovery was going in this direction, to where you're starting to see, okay, this is going to be kind of that senior staff. We're going to start getting in that senior staff kind of groove, to where we start getting in meetings and we kind of do things, and you start getting more feels for the more character development for these guys. You know, let's get some storylines. Let's get some, you know, character arcs for these guys. And I liked the direction that they went with that scene, because we started to see it with Stamets and what was her name? Carla?
Kayla Detmer.
Kayla Detmer. That name sounds familiar. All right. So, yeah, between Stamets and Kayla Detmer. Detmer, Kayla. We'll just go with Detmer.
So, I mean, yeah, tensions rise. And then, you know, Tilly gets a little pissed, too. And because she had these great ideas about how to improve the spore drive.
Yeah.
And he was just like, I'm the smartest guy here. You know, everything you say is worthless.
Well, I think if memory serves me right, what she was trying to do was wanted to use a dark matter something to connect or harness dark matter energy, not dark energy, because apparently that's different.
That's so Harry Potter.
Yeah, and then use the dark matter to connect that and the spores to as a new navigation system, as an alternative from using Stemmons. And then Stemmons tried to use a clever insult to where he's like, yeah, the only relation that dark matter and the spores have is sub and the context, subatomic, whatever the fuck that it's related to. I'm paraphrasing here, but that's basically what it was trying to say.
Yeah, pretty much was like, good try, but...
A for effort, but these have nothing to do with each other. It's literally apples and oranges.
Yeah, and then they kind of make up towards the end of this where the crew kind of realizes, hey, or, you know, the bridge crew is like, yeah, sorry that all happened. And, you know, Stemmons is open to hearing Tilly's ideas and kind of see. I think they bury the hatchet between Detmer and Stemmons also.
Yeah, but Stemmons is still kind of a jackass, isn't he?
He's always been a jackass. That's his personality.
Yeah, but he lightened up a bit, and then it seems like he's becoming more of a jackass again.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit.
So. Let's see.
So you want to go back? We can talk about the rest of the Trill stuff. Because part of the reason they went to Trill, and I can't believe we failed to mention this, is because What's-Her-Face, I honestly don't remember her name, but the human with the symbiote, the 16-year-old girl, doesn't have any memories prior to... symbiotic relationship establishment?
Merging?
Yeah, the merging. That might work too.
Yeah, that works.
But she has no memories.
Which is weird for a Trill, because when a Trill goes through this process, essentially the symbiont retains the memories of the prior hosts, and they're able to access the same memories. Not exactly the same thoughts, but they are aware of their experiences, their feelings, their, you know, again, their memories of the different past hosts. And the fact that they cannot, or she cannot, remember anything is a huge concern. So they have to go to Trill and go talk to the, the elders? I don't remember what exactly they were called.
I don't know. I was thinking of more of a council, because one of them was the leader, and then kind of all of her constituents, I guess, were there. So it seemed more like a council with the lady getting the final ruling.
Yeah.
That's how I saw it, at least.
Yeah, but they needed to consult experts who... Because there are experts who specialize in the symbionts that, you know, these hosts can go to, and, you know, when they're feeling lost, when they're, you know, having trouble with it, that they would look at. But I don't know how much of a help they would actually be, given they haven't seen a symbiont in a while.
Well, that's the thing. I thought I saw some swimming around in the pools there.
There might be. But I don't know, because they do exist in those pools. Those are their hubs and their homes. That's why they have them go to the pools, because it's where they can kind of connect with their hosts, and they have some kind of connection with the water. But that's why they have them go to the pool. But
yeah, that's what I thought. I thought I saw some symbiotes there, and, you know, we find out that the Trill population, because of the burn, has been oh so crippled.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean,
it sounds like a lot of them were. It was like the Thanos snap of the Star Trek universe.
Oh, man, that's a whole other conversation, given that we're two episodes into Falcon and the Winter Soldier. So, I mean, that's a whole other conversation on itself. But
it is, but
it does kind of feel like that.
But that's what the burn is representing, is Thanos snap of.
I mean, this is essentially just complete isolation, cutting off of trade routes. So this is like if, you know, all trade routes in, or shipping or industrialization, or I don't want to say industrialization, but, you know, any means of trade is completely cut off from different countries, and they have to become self-reliant on their own resources. So countries like the United States, who have a lot of diverse natural resources, would be able to sustain itself no problem. But countries like Japan, who are isolated, they might get fucked over. And I think we're seeing kind of that same thing here with these planets. You know, Earth is okay. They have the resources available to protect and defend themselves, but Trill is not holding up so well where they don't have these resources. And I feel like this is kind of the problem that we're dealing with Trill, is that, you know, you're losing your culture because you don't have your symbionts who everybody wants, and you're don't have the resources, you don't have the protection of the Federation, you lost a lot, and you're just kind of struggling to stay afloat here.
Yeah, pretty much how it sounds like.
My God, it almost feels like the Dark Ages, but for the galaxy-wise. You know, when Rome fell, all the territories that it occupied in Europe kind of went back to their own local city-states and local territorial jurisdictions, and they had to fight to survive, and it was almost like a starting over. And then certain powers kind of rose: France, England, Holy Roman Empire, you know, different sorts. And I feel like that's almost what we're seeing in this case, with the Federation pulling out of these areas, pulling out of Earth, pulling out of, you know, the space. We're kind of seeing these rise of these little city state powers, or
could be just the individual planets running themselves.
Yeah.
So,
and maybe you'll see some new, you know, some new empires from old names or from old planets that you kind of heard of in previous Star Trek that have taken advantage of the power vacuum.
Probably so. So
I hope they go that route.
So we find out, you know, they're able to put the girl in the pool, and, you know, she's able to go in, and then Brenham goes in after her after some issues come up, and you find out she's able to pull some of her memories from the past life of this tall symbiote, and she reconnects with it, and now she has what she needs in her memories and access to it. The Trill now can look at her in her species wise and try to achieve symbiosis with other humanoids rather than their own species, and the Discovery gets the information that they need to locate the new Federation location. Interesting. So, I think hopefully it answers our questions and our wagers on where they establish the base in this next episode.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. I don't know, because I'm trying to think how the episode finished and see where they left. I don't necessarily remember where they left off, so I don't know if they're kind of set up to that.
It but sounds they like are going to search for it. One of the last scenes is Brenham and the girl talking, and Brenham's like, "Well, thanks to you, now we have everything we need to locate the Federation." And then it cuts to the movie night scene.
Yeah.
So okay. I think we might get our answer in the next episode. Hopefully. We might. So
what'd you think about the reason why we need to figure out what her name is, but the 16-year-old chick,
I think it's Adira.
Adira. Yeah. Why Adira, had the memory block to begin with.
Probably because it was just a force, merging during a crisis situation after their ship was attacked or it collided with a meteor or whatever. And, a rush job might have prevented it from accessing memories, or it's the first, from what we know and from anyone else knows, it's the first symbiote to merge with a non-Trill species. So there, it was probably just some complications in communicating.
It could have been. I don't know. I was thinking it was more the trauma of the events leading up to it, that it was supposed to be, you know, the death like of the boyfriend.
Like a suppressed memory.
Yeah. That's almost what it seemed like. Like, because it's supposed to be willingly done from both ends to where to have a successful merging. And maybe there was just part of her that was just unwilling to, you know, even just acknowledge that memory. And that was kind of the key focal point holding her back. That's why the tentacles were kind of chasing her and trying to connect with her in the beginning.
Very well could have been.
I don't know. It seemed... I don't know. It was an okay scene. It was an okay storyline. It was an okay... It was believable, but...
So what did you think of these two episodes? If I mean, overall, it sounds like you're enjoying season three so far. So
I'm enjoying the direction that they're going in. And I think that it's definitely improving, which is a good sign for Star Trek. Yeah, I mean, I would say that season three so far is better than season one or two thus far into it. So,
okay.
Because how many episodes are in this season? Was it 10?
No, it's like 13 or something. I feel like we have this conversation every week.
Yes, and I feel like I forget it every week.
You do forget it every week. So it's 13.
13 episodes. Because I remember it's a shorter one. It's a shorter season, but I didn't remember by how much. 13. Okay.
So,
yeah. I don't know. What about you? What are your thoughts?
I don't know. So far, it's okay. I don't know. I'm not entirely into it so far.
It's kind of hard to really make a decision on it, you know, because we're both kind of in that in between. It could be good, but it could also be bad. And it's, we're not entirely sure where it's at yet.
Yeah. I mean, I don't love it. I don't hate it. And that's kind of my stance on it. You know, I felt like there were some good parts where it tied to Deep Space Nine in this episode. And then it felt Enterprise-y in some parts. And you kind of get a throwback to some of the other series in past Star Trek. But I don't love it so far. So,
yeah, I mean, Star Trek was always at its best when it stopped trying to recreate what it did in its past, you know, episodes and do its own thing. And that was, you know, some of the drawbacks and really every Star Trek show. I mean, the first two seasons of Next Generation, I mean, they literally just copied episodes verbatim from the original series. Hmm. And they just added a new twist or new names.
Yeah.
Like it's amazing.
Okay. Well, I don't think I have anything else about these episodes, right? Do you?
You know, I got one thing that I would like to bring up. Brenham and Book seem like they are very close in this year that they have. And the way that Brenham's loosened up, it doesn't quite seem, you know, she says that they haven't boinked yet, but I feel like that if they haven't boinked yet, they're about to within these next couple of episodes. So what do you think the odds are that they boink within these next couple of episodes?
I don't know. They claim to be good friends and partners because they've worked together. So I think it'll be if it happens towards the end of the season.
Towards the end? Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, we're at four episodes in. Give a over under to where how many episodes in do you think it would be until they start boinking?
It'll be the 13... last two.
Okay.
It'll be after 10.
After 10. So probably six more episodes.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So you're thinking it's going to be after. All right. So I'll take before then. So I say within the next six episodes, they will boink. You say after the next six episodes, they will boink.
Yeah.
All right, cool. We shall see.
All right.
Shall we punch it?
Punch it, we can beat him.
Punch it,
kill
it.
Punch it.
Punch it!
Punch it!
Punch it, hot knife! Punch it, let's get the hell out of here.
Let's punch it.
All right, well, what do we got in store for next week's episode, brother?
Well, next time on Deep Space High, we will continue talking about Star Trek Discovery Season 3 with Episode 5, Die Trying, and Episode 6, Scavengers. Just looking at the description, I think we're going to get our answer on where the Federation is. I'm not going to read the description because it's, try not to play it because I'm looking at it through CBS All Access and I don't need it to start blaring in my ears.
I hate it when it does that.
Yeah, actually, it's not even letting me pull up the description, so F it. But yeah, that's what we have next time on Deep Space High.
All right, well, I guess that'll do it for this week's episode then. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Deep Space High, and be sure to join us next time as we continue our discussion on Star Trek Discovery.
Yes, and don't forget to keep the conversation going with hashtag Deep Space High and hashtag Tacos and Trek. Also, be sure to follow our Facebook page and Instagram to stay up to date with our latest announcements. At Facebook, you can find us at Deep Space High Sci-Fi TV Reviews. And on Instagram, you can find us at Deep Space High Podcast.
Yes, and please leave a good review on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, go ahead and give us a 5-star rating. Yes, and tell 3 friends. So go do it. Right now, if you haven't done it yet.
Right, meow.
Yeah, we'll wait for you.
Yeah, no, we won't.
All right. That's the nice part about the pause button. You could just hit pause, go do it, and then come back.
Yeah, there you
All
go.
All right.
Even though you're not missing much at the end of this episode.
Nope, no, you're not. No, you are not. Well, that will do it. So thank you for going back and doing that, because I know you did, because you're a good friend. So I am Sky Marshall Chris.
And I'm Jedi Master Steve.
And live long and prosper.